10 years, 190 races. Sergio Perez is a Formula One Grand Prix winner. Don't pay attention to our Instagram bios. It's Motorsport 101.
Hey guys, Dre Harrison back at it once again, and welcome to episode 283 of Motorsport 101 here. Coming to you live from the Motorsport 101 Discord server, where we are recovering from probably Formula One's race of the year. That was an absolutely chaotic race, especially in the second half. Let's just say the hype was very much real on not the Roval, but indeed the Bar Rhombus.
We stan the Bar Rhombus here in this Discord.
Oh, we stan it so hard. It is our baby now, and we must endorse it to be on the F1 calendar every year. I say we expand the calendar to 24 races and we have a Bar Rhombus at the start and the end of the year.
I say one every six races.
I'm good with this. They're all worth double points because the people will try extra hard to pass in the back oval of the track. I'm here for all of this. But we will get to one of the craziest F1 races we've had in the hybrid era so far. Yes. You are reading that correctly. Sergio Perez is finally a Grand Prix winner after 190 Grand Prix.
10 years of trying. 10 years of frustration.
It is wild that Esteban Ocon getting his first career podium is barely registering on the F1 crazy story shit scale index, to say the least. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the inevitable triumph and heartbreak of George Russell's Mercedes debut, all the backmarker support, and just generally a hectic race. And we haven't even mentioned the Formula 2 finale yet, because holy shit, we have a new champion in Formula 2, and we had to get through quite a lot of chaos to get to that point. But it's a good weekend to be a Schumacher, and it's a good weekend to be in Indian sports. More on that later as well, but with me as always, we have RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. Yes, races like the Sakhir Grand Prix are why we watch Formula 1, why we sit through so many dreadfully mundane, processional, boring races where we have to subject ourselves to the tired, shitty narratives of Formula 1 social media. Somehow, in the end, it's all worth it because of moments like this. Well, mostly worth it. Okay, just races like this are the ones that make it worth it somehow. I think.
Just about. Maybe. With me as well is Mr. Playoff Beard, Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Yes, hello. I should also note to everyone at home, because of how early in the episode Dre swore, I'll have to censor him.
Damn it! Sorry, King. I sincerely apologize for the extra 10 seconds of editing work that has to get put in.
I have a question. If you're up 3 points and you have one play left, what are you calling on defense?
I am literally just gonna line up on the goal line, so whatever happens, nothing's going in.
That man orchestrated a bounty system with another team.
Amazing. Like, I call it a playoff beard. Like, in other words, the beard will be around until the New York Jets win a game, so it'll probably come off sometime in 2022.
Let's go, 10 for Trevor, let's go!
A most wonderful, perfect tank. A tank so hard it would end up on an episode of Urinating Trees this week in Sports Ball. With me as well is Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
The at 500 Cam Buckley, because the Patriots are 6-6, and honestly, considering what we've got, that's a win for us.
Yes! We are so startedly mediocre. It's beautiful.
We are quite literally the definition of mid.
We are mid! It's where we want to be. It's mid. It's delicious.
I wish my team was mid.
Your team is as bottom as it gets.
Yeah. It's like our team color is this shade of green for a reason.
Bogey green. So all of that and much, much more in the next hour or so on Motorsport 101. But let's run down the general housekeeping and run down the places you can find us. We're on YouTube.com, as you can probably tell right here and now, if you're watching us on there. If not, YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Subscribe, hit the bell, get notifications when new videos go up, including one I put out today on the day of recording, December 9th, talking about the situation at Mercedes and their future, which we'll inevitably discuss in more detail probably in the next 20 minutes or so. We're also on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. And if you want to find our personal handles, they're on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube. And if not, they're in the description down below. If not, we're at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and CBuckley917. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. I almost said Twitter for a second there. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio versions of our shows. You can upgrade to the gold $10 tier for all the video versions of the podcast as well, and get into the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as are a bunch of people in our Discord right now, as usual. Thanks to Toki, to Vince, to Jason, to Joseph and Vic, all listening in. Hope you guys enjoy the show tonight. It should be a doozy. And of course, you can find all those details and so much more on our website, motorsport101.com. Expect a nice old season review for Formula One up there in the next week or so at time of recording. So, without further ado, let's get into the rhombus for the Sakhir Grand Prix. The eyes of the F1 world were watching as George Russell took to his extremely crammed Mercedes W11 as Lewis Hamilton's COVID-19 substitute. Allegedly, Stoffel Vandoorne is still in his hotel playing Warzone as we speak, probably via PS3. He proved to be ultra-competitive right from the off. Qualified just 0.026 of a second off pole position behind his teammate Valtteri Bottas, with Max Verstappen close behind in third, and the one-run king Charles Leclerc taking a walk-off fourth. No, seriously, he walked off halfway through the session. It was good enough for fourth. Decent lap. Race got underway, and within 20 seconds, we had Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc in a wall, the latter causing a lock-up and clattering into Sergio Perez at turn 4, Max taking evasive action to the gravel, and then the wall itself being unable to control his car. Sergio Perez had to change a front wing and drop to 18th. Remember that, it becomes important later.
Oh boy, does it become important later.
I've been waiting weeks to say that again on this podcast. George Russell took the lead off the first corner and didn't really look back, breaking off an 8-second lead under the first round of pit stops, Valtteri losing badly on the undercut. Meanwhile, Sergio Perez mounted a furious comeback through the field and by lap 50 of 87 was running fourth after an early safety car stop. The race, however, got flipped on its head on lap 55 when Jack Aitken spun out of the final corner, the front wing being left on the track, causing another safety car. One lap later, Mercedes tried to double stack their cars in response, but a radio failure in Russell's garage caused the team to put Valtteri's front tyres on Russell's car. As Mercedes corrected their error, Bottas lost over 30 seconds, while Mercedes realised and forced Bottas to continue on his well-used hard tyres. A lap after that, Russell had to come in again to get rid of Valtteri's set, which incurred an investigation from the stewards, because in shocking news, you can't run your teammate's tyres. More on that later, but it dropped George Russell to fifth, which somehow promoted Sergio Perez to the lead of the race ahead of Ocon, Stroll and Bottas. It didn't last long though, as Russell pulled off a spectacular move on the chicane to retake Bottas and charge for the lead, which is what would have happened if George Russell didn't suffer a left rear puncture with 8 laps to go. Russell was out of the running for major points, which left Sergio Perez somehow in his 190th career Grand Prix from 18th on the opening lap to win his first career Grand Prix, the longest an F1 driver has ever had to wait in the sport for their first. Esteban Ocon took his first career podium finish in second, with Lance Stroll third to complete a 40-point weekend for Racing Point, their best ever result in the sport, and the first Mexican Grand Prix victory in 50 years. Heartbreak though for George Russell, as he could only manage ninth and a fastest lap bonus point in a race he was destined to win. Thankfully, due to that radio failure, only a €20,000 fine and not a disqualification for the Mercedes driver. Whatever the result, a star was born. Ooh, where do we even start on this fellas?
What the fuck was that race?
It was awesome, that's what it was.
Oh my goodness.
That got me out of my chair. That had me excited.
Yeah,
again,
to take a step back for a second, besides the shenanigans that we talked about in the recap, we saw some good wheel-to-wheel action on the Bahamas.
Yes.
Like, this layout actually produced good racing.
How?
Yeah. and surprisingly enough, it wasn't a DRS fest. We had them actually fighting on all three sectors of the track.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Somehow, they nailed it. Can I just get into a couple things as well? Pietro Fittipaldi at Haas, standing in for an injured Romain Grosjean, and Jack Aitken, who, because George Russell got called up to Mercedes, ended up filling in for Williams. Both drivers making their Formula One Grand Prix debut, and can I say they did a fantastic job given the circumstances. Yes, they were nowhere near the points, but Fittipaldi had a good account of himself. He brought the car home in one piece. Jack Aitken was seriously quick. He was threatening to outqualify Nicholas Latifi on his Grand Prix debut. And up until the key point of the race, that incident where he knocked the front wing off and brought out that safety car, Aitken was doing quite well for himself, too.
They did a
very solid job. I actually remember seeing the clip of Haas's radio to Pietro after the race, and he said, "Look, Pietro, you were only 4 seconds off your teammate in the end. You were very fast all weekend long," and they thanked him for all the hard work. And Pietro just said, "It was a fucking dream." It was literally the words he used. It was a dream. Thank you so much for all the help and support. It was actually one of the most genuinely wholesome messages of the day, and we had quite a few of those for obvious reasons. The best compliment I can say about these dudes over the weekend was that it didn't feel like it was their first Grand Prix. Like, Aitken held a pretty solid account of himself out there, as did Pietro, and that's all you can really ask for given the circumstances.
Yeah, it felt like they were ready for the moment, is the best
absolutely.
Way to put it. The moment wasn't too big for them to step into the Formula One world.
Indeed.
And it really shows, like, how many drivers out there are ready to be in Formula One. They might not be, you know, top of the line Grand Prix victory contending drivers in terms of skill, but there is certainly
not yet, but
there's certainly a lot of people who are ready to at least get a day in the sun behind the seat of a Grand Prix car.
King, that was the thing, because it come up, like, one of my friends was discussing how, like, a lot of these junior series don't really develop drivers the way that they used to, but I'd say they're still pretty ready, even though they'd only been given short notice. Can we also talk about how Lance Stroll got it on the podium? And I know his teammate's going to get all the plaudits, but I know Stroll needed that because he's been hurting for points for a while. Esteban Ocon in second. I have been lauding his potential and wondering when he was going to realize it. And I know this has been kind of a down year because he spent it largely in Daniel Ricciardo's shadow, and now that Fernando Alonso is coming in, everybody's going to be worried, like, ooh, is Esteban Ocon going to become Stoffel Vandoorne number two? He needed a result like this. He did not put a foot wrong. It was a terrific drive from him. And I hope that this is only the start of bigger and better things to come from him.
I want to say, I think that's Renault's best result in a Grand Prix since 2011. Nearly a decade since Renault had a second place finish.
Three podiums this year, King.
Three.
The blueberry pie bet's looking, I don't know.
Warmer. The banana bet was looking real dangerous for a second.
Yeah.
Woo! The banana bet's dead. Long live the blueberry pie bet.
Ocon,
I really rated Ocon before this year, and it's been rough. I think less because he's been poor, but because Daniel Ricciardo's been especially
really
brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But Ocon drove a fantastic race.
Really did.
Yeah.
And held off what was Lance is a frustrating one. Lance could have very easily won this race, but spent a lot of the race trying to set Ocon up for the main straight when what he should have been doing, and what his teammate eventually earned a win with, was setting him up for the second straight. But huge points for Racing Point in the W10 40. R at this point.
I guess.
Man, I don't even care that it's a copy-paste from 2019 Mercedes. This thing goes.
And we should really speak about the man of the hour. 8 years we've been waiting! Eight years since Malaysia 2012!
He got his first win! That is the day I became a Sergio Perez fan. The day I woke up and realized that he pushed Fernando Alonso to an inch of his life in mixed conditions of Malaysia. And he almost won in Italy that year, too. And Sergio Perez hunting Lewis Hamilton
the fuck down at the end of that race.
And what a time for Sergio. What a time for Sergio to do this. When his future is still very much in question. And he's been stringing together very good performances. He's arguably had the best year of his 10-year career thus far. And
I wouldn't say arguably.
To go out of this season with a win, when everybody is talking about how unfortunate it would be if he doesn't have a ride next year in a very competitive driver market, I think that was very special. Honestly, if he had decided right then and there, look, my future's not certain, I want to walk away a winner, I would have understood. But I think now this really does, I think this does solidify that Sergio Perez deserves a place somewhere on the Formula One grid. It's a shame it's likely going to come at the expense of Alexander Albon, who is a very nice man. And in any other circumstances, we'd be talking about a sixth place finish for him is very encouraging, but not for him today, given the circumstances. And
considering the only team that's usually ahead of Red Bull on raw pace ended up behind them.
I was gonna say
it's never a good sign when the first thing you say about a driver is how nice a guy they are. That's often the indicator right there. And another difficult Grand Prix for Albon, a race where he was never really in any sort of contention. The sixth is about par for where that second Red Bull should be, but just largely unimpressive most of the race. And again, and the one man
especially when Max, you know, before the race was looking like he could give the Mercedes something to think about.
Dude, those Honda power cars were a weapon in practice and qualifying.
Everyone but Albon. Albon, I think they're having to run so much wing on the car just to make him comfortable. He was the slowest driver in the speed traps. Yeah. Slower than the red sleds. More on them later.
Yeah.
just an incredible weekend for Checo. And as I said on Twitter after the race, I said there is virtually zero justifiable reason at this point for Red Bull to keep Albon over him. It's untenable. Perez is too good.
Perez is going from strength to strength while Albon is going from disaster to disaster.
He was four laps and a blown engine away from second, third, and first being his last three race results in a Racing Point. He's on fire right now. That's not just his old power unit either. Like, he is driving as well as he's ever driven in his life. I mean, like, since missing COVID, he has been in the points every Grand Prix but one. Has been in the top six for over half of those races, including two podium finishes and a win! A win! A win! In a Racing Point! A win!
Ignore the fact that it's last year's Mercedes. No, Perez has been phenomenal this year.
And think about this. Where were we 28 months ago? The team that is now Racing Point is in administration because Sergio Perez brought them into administration to save everybody's jobs in the wake of Vijay Mallya's disgrace when Force India imploded.
Yeah, he put them in administration explicitly to not have them wound up when there was other parties who had not been paid trying to have them wound up with immediate effect.
Yeah.
Like Perez is I've said it before.
He's the reason that team still exists.
They are the beating heart and soul of this team, and he's going to be unemployed in like literally 4 days' time. That is like the end. It's the Andrea Dovizioso effect only again. It is terrifying that there is a... I mean, the discourse before this race weekend, because I know Buxton and Lawrence Barreto said on the record, it's looking like Albon's going to keep his seat for next year. And it's now getting to the point where it's now genuinely hard to justify Albon keeping his seat in this scenario.
Well, the thing is now is it seems we have a bit of a power struggle within the ranks of Red Bull, where Dieter
Mattis,
the tie-backing... Yeah. And the tie backing of Red Bull want to keep Albon.
Yeah.
The team seem to want Albon out of there. The problem is, Dieter pays the bills.
Indeed. And that's rare, because he doesn't normally step in the day-to-day running of that team. By all accounts, it's Horner and Marco's team.
Yes, but the thing is, Thailand's never had a Formula One driver. Well, they...
Not since Prince Burraking.
Yes, Thailand hasn't had a Formula One driver in 5 decades, and Albon, despite not being raised in Thailand and obviously having the surname Albon, he's still the closest thing to like a national hero that Thailand has in motor racing.
He's the closest thing to a superstar there.
Yeah,
considering what's been going on with him this year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you said it, Dre. Perez has been so good this year, and it's only getting better.
Yeah,
and his results, you can argue his results in the last couple races are what is now keeping Racing Point in the fight for third in the Constructors, because this was a huge day for them. A 1-3, while one McLaren, had kind of a bad day.
Yeah, first... freaking Northamptonshire-based F1 team victory since Fisichella in Brazil in 2003.
Yikes.
That's the first
a long time ago
win for Brazil for a Mexican
name.
Driver since Pedro Rodriguez in 1970.
Yeah, the 1970 Belgian Grand Prix is only the third Mexican F1 win ever.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but Pedro Rodriguez was gone not long thereafter that.
Yeah, 1971 at the wheel, I believe, of a Ferrari 512M.
Man.
Obviously, he made his name in the Gulf Porsches of the day, but he was a damn fast Formula One driver, too.
Yeah. To put it into perspective, that's the longest anyone's ever had to go through an F1 career before they got their first win. I think by a good 60-plus races.
Yeah, an order of magnitude. I believe it was Mark Webber was the second longest.
Yeah, I think it was 120-something.
Took him a while. Rosberg... Mansell.
Button.
Yeah.
Button was 110 and change, I think, as well.
Barrichello as well, but...
Yeah.
It's vindication for all those years that we knew Perez was so much better than the god-awful McLaren that he got 1 year and was really made the scapegoat for McLaren that year.
Right!
Yeah.
The Force India's after, and... Mm. He just kept chipping away.
Yeah, and the opportunities finally landed for him. And it's, like I said, George Russell, who we'll get to very briefly in a minute, was his first tweet after what had to have been a heartbreaking Grand Prix for him, said, and I quote literally, "Congrats to Sergio Perez. No one on the grid deserved one more." And, you know, says a lot about George Russell, the guy, quite frankly. To put it into perspective, Perez has missed 2 races. That win has now overtaken Daniel Ricciardo to put him 4th in the championship, despite missing 2 rounds through COVID-19.
Amazing.
And it puts Racing Point 10 points ahead of McLaren in the battle for 3rd in the Constructors' Championship with 1 round to go. It was an absolutely critical weekend for Racing Point. They had to cash in big, and they did, as Cam alluded to. Carlos Sainz had a great day in 4th, but Lando Norris struggled all race and ended up in 10th. So, they ended up losing 27 points in that swing against Racing Point, and that could be a death sentence, given that, obviously, midfield points are harder to come by. So, you're not going to expect to get the big swings when you're probably going to be fighting on paper for 4th and 5th, most likely, compared to wins in 2nd places. Now we have to talk about George Russell. I mean, what an incredible weekend he had.
The hype was real. All the hype that we talked about, and I had confidence that he could live up to it. You know, everybody says you could plug anybody into a Mercedes-Benz and he'll shine. But there are certain intangibles that George Russell displayed with just a weekend of the car in anger and a car that he doesn't even really fit right in. He showed stuff that is next level. He showed glimpses of next level from the moment he got a start to the moment he built up a lead over a veteran Grand Prix winning teammate to the time when, after the first pit stop kerfuffle, he puts on one of the most sensational passes of the season, round the outside and inside of Valtteri Bottas, through the S-curves at the north end of the circuit.
Incredibly brave
you
pass.
Could not have asked anything more from him performance-wise. It's a shame he doesn't get the result that it deserves, and quite frankly, I'd have been heartbroken if he'd ended up outside the points, but he put on a hell of a last-minute push. He did get some help from a good friend who decided to wave him on by, of course, but hey, he'll take the 3 points. He doesn't have to be lumped in with Charles Peake and Luca Badoer. He has his first points.
Yeah. Look, here's the visual metaphor I wanted to describe that situation as. If you didn't know any better, and you put a purple and gold helmet on, you'd think that was Lewis Hamilton in that car. You know, narrowly lost out on pole. That has happened to Hamilton over the course of this season with Valtteri. Valtteri, to his credit, is genuinely a very good qualifier. He can challenge Hamilton over a lap on occasion. If you didn't know any better, you think that was Lewis Hamilton in that car. If you were none the wiser.
Yeah.
He was majestic. That he could not have done any better. I don't normally quote the redacted on here, but in their driver ratings, they gave him a 10 out of 10 score, which I think is the only 10 I've seen all season. And it was completely deserved.
He could not have driven better. He was superb.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are hyping him up for reasons that they don't necessarily hype up Lewis Hamilton, but that doesn't matter so much, but that doesn't matter as much in this context. George Russell drove fantastically, and man, if I'm Valtteri Bottas, I'm thinking, well, I guess I can just take the buyouts, chill at home for a year, and call it a day.
Yeah, because, well, there was another Mercedes in the race, and if some of those who say, oh, well, plug any top-tier driver into a Mercedes and they win, were vindicated, well, maybe they were. But if Lewis lost a couple points of stock, and I'm quoting King before the recording here, Bottas' stock just dropped to Black Monday 1929. He got clubbed by Russell in the race.
Yeah. I like, Bottas' race could be summed up by the radio message his own engineer gave him when he crossed the line, where it's like, Valtteri, Checo won the Grand Prix. He was on older tires than you were.
Oh, man.
Bruh.
We've heard it all before. We've heard it all before with Valtteri that, oh, well, this happened and this is why I didn't win. Well, here's the thing. We hear that the Mercedes can't pass in dirty air. Not a problem for Hamilton and Russell.
No.
Yeah, because at first, when you hear about that with Hamilton.
When Hamilton and Russell can go scything through a field and Bottas just stays in place. What are we going to do with Valtteri?
Look,
because it seems with almost every weekend his stock gets a little lower and a little lower.
Yeah. I've tried. I've tried with Valtteri. I understand that, like, it's not all on him in the sense of we want him to be the Hamilton threat because we are desperate as casuals for entertainment. We want someone to challenge Hamilton. We know that Max hasn't really got the car to do it, so we're all pinning all our hopes on the porridge man in the other side of the garage, and it just hasn't materialized. There was no way Valtteri could have come off this Grand Prix any worse. Like, no. It was...
Russell had to do 2 extra pit stops, and fair play to Valtteri, he was on older tires. But as King mentioned, Perez was on the oldest tires. He went out and won the race in last year's Mercedes. Bottas only beat Russell by 3 seconds.
Not good. Not good.
And Russell doesn't fit in the car properly. Russell's pressing the wrong buttons on the steering wheel. After his first pit stop, Russell accidentally shut the ERS off on his car.
Russell had to
walk him through Yeah.
Russell had to take an extra pit stop during the race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because it'd be one thing if Valtteri was the typical number two who accepts his role like the Barrichellos and to an extent the Webbers of the world.
And the Irvines. But
the less we talk about Eddie Irvine on this podcast, the better. But
talk about his F3000 cars. Different. Those look dope.
That's fair. Like, it's different.
Bottas comes into every year when he says, oh, I just need to change these couple of things and I'll beat Lewis. And then Lewis beats him even harder.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, against Lewis Hamilton, fair. He's statistically the greatest driver the sport's ever seen. But
yeah.
Russell's had a week in the car.
Yeah, Russell not only has a week in a car, but this is literally his sophomore season in Formula One, and you're a veteran of more than 5 years.
And it's not just pace, it's racecraft. Russell's move on Bottas was a heart eater. Yeah. He stomped that boy through the middle sector.
Yeah, I was going to say.
One of the best passes I've seen in F1 in the last 5 years.
Yeah, like, honestly, let's not forget, this is only George Russell's 37th Grand Prix, like, in total, like, and he was wearing size 10 shoes when he's a size 11, and as Vic made a very good point in that chat just now, Mercedes drivers, by coincidence, have just happened to be quite on the small side, like, that's why their cockpits are so small, like, the biggest guy that had driven one of their cars before was Michael Schumacher, who is 5'9". George Russell's a legitimate 6'1".
Like, George Russell could probably play point guard if he had trained for basketball instead of automobile racing.
Yeah, he's 6'1". Squeezed in the car. He's not comfortable. I said he's pressing the wrong buttons on the steering wheel. The play where it almost cost him. If this was 2016 and we still had the radio rules in place, that would have cost him the win even more.
Yeah, because it was at one point in the race where he accidentally, like, not turn off his ERS, but put it in definitely not the optimum setting to be in.
Yeah, well, when you come into the pits, you turn it down to use as little battery as possible.
It's just like turning down the start.
Yeah.
I was worried about the start because he's just getting used to the steering wheel and he's coming off of Williams, which is notoriously hard to get off the line.
Yeah, apparently he took a copy of Mercedes steering wheel, took it home, and practiced that start over 100 times in his hotel room. True story.
And that's the mentality you gotta have.
Because what else are you gonna do in a hotel room when nobody's out doing anything, any social gatherings? Like, can you believe I went to an F1 Grand Prix and nobody's out doing anything? This is outrage.
Shut up, Joe. Pipe down over there.
It didn't stop Jack Aitken when he found out he was driving the car when he was bollock naked in his hotel room. And I say you got to celebrate how you can in these bio bubbles.
that's a champion's mentality. That's a future champion's mentality. I'm not good at this. I'm going to bring this home and I'm going to learn until I'm good at it. That's the right mentality.
Absolutely.
And he was superb. That's the only way to put it. He could not have driven better. And the only reason he didn't win was, of course, an operational mistake. And you know what? Without that puncture, he was taking about half a second out of Perez every lap. And Perez was driving for his life.
Yeah, he was gonna run down Perez. And the fact that
no doubt,
like, despite being, you know, on hard tires, like, he had the pace. He had the ability to get around Sergio.
You know what reminded me of? That moment we were all there together watching Charles' engine die in Bahrain last year. That's what it felt like when first the botch pit stop and then the puncture. But you know what George driving this Mercedes reminded me of? It reminded me of what we should have gotten with Jules Bianchi in a Ferrari once he finally would have made that move up.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking of when I saw George in that Mercedes.
That's quite poignant. All things considered, given he's a size 11 in size 10 shoes, he was banging his knees against the cockpit of the car. He came out of the car with bloody fists. Bloody fists because he couldn't operate his steering wheel properly, and he probably should have won that race comfortably. That is an astonishing performance from George Russell, by no matter which way you slice it. Like, the way that Toto Wolff described and talked about it after the Grand Prix and afterwards to Sky Germany in general, I don't think it's going to be the last time we see George in that Mercedes.
No, I agree.
Probably.
It might not be the last time this year. Unfortunately, yeah. We're recording this the day before we learn whether Lewis Hamilton still has COVID or not. We're sorry.
Bad timing on that. But
and Toto Wolff also said something else after the race regarding, signing Valtteri Bottas to a 2021 contract early. Well, you have to work with the information you have.
That's the dreaded vote of confidence, isn't it?
Of no confidence.
Where was the confidence being installed in that statement? Because I don't see it personally.
The vote of confidence before.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Football Club United decides to sack their 10th manager in the last 5 weeks.
Indeed. And after all of that, Lewis Hamilton only lost 4 points in the championship lead. What a weekend off to have. Honestly, Mercedes, you could tell Lewis, take the rest of the year off. We'll talk the contract over in January. There is no reason that man needs to race this weekend. None. None whatsoever. Tell him to take the weekend off. I don't care. I want to see George again. I sound like a fucking fangirl on Twitter. I need to stop.
Can I get you into the F1, F2 finale before you... before you metamorph into fangirl mode?
Oh, no. Yes. I think we do, just to reiterate what happened to Sergio Perez on that first lap. Honestly, had it, the start of the race with, the images of the race before in my head, I was real nervous for that opening lap.
Of course.
And it was kind
of
justified.
Kimi Raikkonen spinning out on turn three. I was like, no.
Very smooth recovery by Kimi to get that back going without even dropping a gear. And then Leclerc just trying too hard, locked up, clattered into Perez, ran Max into the wall. And, Ferrari looked pretty trash, and Ferrari was pretty trash.
Yeah.
The usual.
Leclerc was clearly the fastest man, had the fastest setup, and then just chucked it away into the race.
And received a 3-place grid drop for Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. What's funny? Sebastian Vettel made that comment last week about how Charles takes too many liberties on the opening lap. And I honestly thought Seb was a bit harsh in that assessment last week, because Charles didn't really do anything wrong last week. It was an aggressive, fair move in the end, and there was no contact. So as far as I'm concerned, he's good to go. A week later, he does that. And I'm just like, well, maybe Seb had a point.
Well, the thing is, Seb is generally a driver who's going to, if you're going to try and drive through him, he's going to jump out of the way.
Yeah.
Perez is not.
No. Right.
Perez is a driver who says, you want to have an accident, you want to try and make me yield, go ahead, have that accident.
This season, I feel like Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen are the only two drivers who can match Lewis Hamilton's level on a consistent basis on their good days. The problem is, on their bad days, they're just chucking it in the wall.
That's the biggest thing with Lewis, is that even if he isn't operating at peak performance, he doesn't really drop off. When Charles has a bad day, he usually takes four cars out with him in the gravel, and ditto with Max. Charles is trying too hard. Vettel's realized the best course of action with this Ferrari is to just run out the year, and Charles is trying to get everything he can.
Yeah.
And
bless him.
We're seeing the fruits of those approaches right now. Vettel can't score points, and Charles crashes like every two or three races.
It's a brutal one. Again, just to further clarify on the Russell situation, again, he was under investigation for running Valtteri Bottas' tyres from that double-stacked botched error. Normally, under normal circumstances, it is up to steward's discretion, but it's pretty much a disqualification if you run somebody else's tyres. However, because of the mitigating factors of, one, only George Russell's radio failure, and the fact, well, they kind of got punished enough by having to run Russell through the pits a second time to rectify the error on the lap straight afterwards. They only gave Mercedes a €20,000 fine instead of a DQ, which is what
people were alluding to. If you put the wrong tires on, it's okay as long as you correct within three laps.
If they're your own tires. If they're your own tires.
If they're your own tires. The thing is, they broke a different rule where he dipped into Valtteri sets, which pushed him over the allocation of 13 sets for the weekend.
Yes,
and broke a different rule. And that's one of the reasons why I think that's where the steward's discretion came in.
Because, yeah, normally if you do that,
it was a radio error.
Yeah. Instant disqualification if you normally do that.
Yeah. But yeah, stewards used their discretion, took into account the radio error and the miscommunication, and just gave Mercedes a slap on the wrist and a severe wrist slap, and they do not do that again, Chief, basically, for that one. So yeah, George Russell gets to keep his 3 points, two for the ninth and then one for the fastest lap of the race.
He's on the board!
Yeah! Yes. Suck it, Latifi! bad luck, son. I feel a bit bad for Latifi in the end, because he was actually going to be ahead of him in the
Williams.
Drivers' Championship.
Williams is like, he's on the board. We're not.
They were knocking on the door. I think Nicholas Latifi was running 12th when his power unit died. It was just
Yep, oil leak for Latifi's car.
Like, I wonder...
Brutal.
I wonder if there's ever been a point in the sports history where a team had a driver score points, but they end the season with 0 points in the constructors.
Amazing. Like, what are the odds on that? Bad luck, Jack. Hey, who knows? You might get another chance this weekend. We'll have to wait and see. But look, before we move on to Formula 2, 9 out of 10 Grand Prix. That's the best Formula 1
Fantastic.
Race. Of this year, in my opinion. Maybe the best of the last 2 years, I'd argue, because that was a tremendous race. It was... I retrospectively went back and gave Monza a 7, because it was the emotion and the heartbreak and the fever of one of those properly brilliant emotional sporting stories of Sergio Perez's first win. But we had actual racing, too.
Yeah,
like,
This was Monza with good wheel-to-wheel racing.
Yeah,
I love it.
It wasn't, you know, wet weather shenanigans or other things that just caused chaos. We actually had, you know, actual racing.
And I loved it. I think, personally, that F1 should consider courses with shorter laps, layouts with shorter laps. You don't have to have 15, 20, 25 corners per... Okay, it's not going to work with every circuit, but today, that day, it worked.
Look at tracks that fit, you know, they fit the bill for F1 in terms of safety and market. But look for something, or try to architect it, that will just give us a canvas to produce a good race. There's too many tracks that are trying to be technical for technicality's sake, when really, we just want a fun race.
Funny you mention that. We're going to one of those tracks next week.
Oh, yay. Formula 1 season finale next week in the most dead rubber of dead rubber races. Happy Derby, everybody!
Derby!
Can we run
But before that, the Formula 2 review.
God. So, the feature race. Yuki Tsunoda on pole, Nikita Mazepin takes the whole shot, spent most of the race trying to ram his rivals into the wall. The race, though, culminates in an incredible dogfight between Yuki Tsunoda for the win. He breaks off with Guan Yu Zhou. Mazepin scraps for everything he's got worth for third ahead of Drugovich until he gets hit with not one, but 2 5-second penalties for aggressive defending, dropping him to ninth. Now, of course, this is all in the manner of this. There's this title fight going on. 5 drivers entered it, still mathematically eligible, technically speaking, but realistically it's down to 2 people. Callum Ilott, who again isn't coming back to F2 next year, doesn't have an F1 drive, and Mick Schumacher, who's got the F1 drive locked up. Ilott finishes 5th. Schumacher finishes 6th, so the gap's now down to 14 points between the only 2 title contenders left, and it's 15 points for a win, 2 points bonus for fast slap in the sprint race.
Yeah, okay, RJ, but going into the final race, it would mean Arlott would need second and fastest lap minimum to have any chance of the title.
Yes.
With a Schumacher non-score.
Yeah, Schumacher would have to not score points. So things are effectively out of his hands if Mick is in the points.
Yeah. So we go then the sprint race. Early Sunday morning. Too damn early for me. I've just watched a very good Super Formula race. I've just woken up. Dan Ticktum takes the reverse grid pole. We love Dan Ticktum, don't we? He led early on, and then Mick Schumacher suffered a disaster as he flat spots his front left tire just seconds into the race. He held on early on, but eventually fell down the points position so badly he had to pit with 15 laps left, ending his points haul for the season. So now he's vulnerable to be overtaken by Callum Ilott if he has a good race. But back and forth, Jahan Daruvala broke off from the pack to win his first F2 race. Tsunoda passes Ticktum at the final quarter to make it a Carlin 1-2 with Ticktum in third. And Callum Ilott falls into 10th place late with tire issues of his own. And your 2020 Formula 2 champion of the world, Mick Schumacher.
Yeah! Woo!
Schumacher world champion just sounds right.
It feels,
it just feels right. Yeah. It's beautiful.
We need to mention, yes, Mick Schumacher did flat spot his tire seconds into the race. Hmm. But Mick Schumacher realized something during this year. Something that he's been using to great effect. I don't necessarily have to win.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to make sure the other guy loses. And when Callum Ilott caught him, Mick put on the most ferocious defensive masterclass I've ever seen him put on.
Back the wagon up.
Yep. Back that ass up into every corner. And he wrecked Ilott's tires before pitting for himself. Yep. And Ilott tried to hold on as best he could, but he wasn't going to win anyways. Yeah. The win was far out of reach. And then his own tires finally gave out with laps to go.
Yeah.
He fell down through the field.
And even Schumacher, when he pitted for fresh tires, he went back out there, got fastest lap. So in case something were to happen and he finishes 10th, he doesn't score 1 point. He scores 3 points. So even if Ilott won the race and there was nothing that Ilott could have done to win the championship.
Yeah, they played it perfectly where Prema realized, all we have to do is get fast to slap and it becomes an almost untenable situation for Ilott. Yeah.
Exactly. The scoreboard was always in Mick's favor.
Yep.
He was mixture consistency, brilliant off the line, consistent scoring points. Even when we were worried if he didn't have that killer instinct early in the season. Believe it or not, with how chaotic this season was, he was just simply going out there consistently scoring in the points.
I don't know. I think that killer instinct showed up in the last few races.
In the last few races, he developed a lot
in terms of racecraft. And year two Mick is a thing.
Yeah.
Like, are we picking him for 2022 F1 World Drivers Champion?
I don't know. I hope he gets through 2021 okay first. I mean, Haas is going to have some Augusta, and I know.
Oh
Cam
my God,
is not
we didn't even mention
but,
that.
Yeah, Ferrari just gave one of their best technical people to Haas.
Their only technical person. They already did this. Remember 2019?
Yeah.
That happened because they gave away their chief designer in mid-2018 to Alfa Romeo. Now they're doing it again for Haas. Hey,
because they're going to be damned if their prize prospect is going to suffer the way that Grogro and K-Mag have done in that piece of shit.
And remember how good the 2019 Alfa was out of the box?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How good was it towards the end of the season?
Yeah. Yeah. They're just going to let Charles and Sainz suffer while Haas shines, I guess.
Yeah. Can I?
Dre's just slammed his light in protest.
Slammed his halo light. I want to wrap this up on a couple of notes here. Mick Schumacher was excellent. Callum Ilott should be racing somewhere next year. I don't care if it's F1 or anywhere else. Sign this kid. He is
good stuff. I think this would be a good time for me to just run through the final standings. If you guys have anything to say about any of the drivers, just chime in.
Oh, I've got something to say for number three.
So,
oh boy.
Our champion, Mick Schumacher, 215. Vice champion, Callum Ilott, 201. Mm-hmm. Third place in the championship.
Deserves a ride somewhere.
No doubt.
Yep, third place in the championship, Yuki Tsunoda on 200.
Tremendous season. Yuki Tsunoda 15 points off the
title. Surprise of the year for me.
Yep.
Oh, God, yeah. He almost smashed and grabbed second on the way out.
I knew it was going to be good. I didn't know he was going to be that good that soon. He got the Pirelli Trophy voted on as the most outstanding driver in F2 and F3 by the media.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He is ready for F1. And I can't argue with that.
Yeah, and if he gets the call up to AlphaTauri next year for Honda's last year and this stint in F1, it will be fully deserved. Absolutely. I just hope Red Bull doesn't chew him up and spit him back out.
God, I hope
not. Kid's good.
Yeah.
Kid's very good.
Fourth in the championship, Robert Schwartzman, 177.
Learn to manage your tires, and he's going to be a weapon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, title favorite next year.
It's hard. He did have a okay rookie year, but the thing is he was fourth in the championship but still the second rookie, which
I think that says more about the quality of the rookie class.
It says more about the field than it does about Schwartzman, who, let's not forget, won more races in the Formula 2 this year than anybody else with four.
His peaks were higher than anyone else's. He just got to work on the troughs.
Yeah, exactly. Look, if he gets his tire management in order, he is sensationally fast when he wants to be. Like, disgustingly quick. Maybe the best upside of anyone in the series, if he's dialed in right. And if that happens, everybody look out.
Yeah. Okay, so fifth place in the championship. Nikita Mazepin on 164.
I'm gonna hold on to him later.
Sixth place, Christian Guanyu-Zhou. Seventh place, Christian Lundgaard. Eighth, Louis Delatrez. Ninth, Luka Drugovich. Tenth, Luca Giotto.
Yeah, by all accounts, it seems like all these drivers from under fifth will be back next year.
I think Guanyu needs to give himself less work to do on race day.
Yeah,
but he has really great racecraft. He has good tire management. I think he has a lot of upside.
Do not sleep on Jahan Daruvala. If that last race and if his testing form is anything to go by, this dude is going to make a massive leap forward in 2021.
In F2, I think he was the most improved driver across the season.
Yeah.
Across the second half of the season, I agree. And look, he had the speed. It was a matter of getting the car to the line.
Yeah. And now that he's working that out, he's getting good results.
Yeah.
I love Formula 2.
And he's the fastest in postseason testing. So
I love Formula 2, man.
We got nothing. I'd like to mention Christian Lundgaard as well. He might be another guy. I think it could be Schwartzman, Drugovich, and Lundgaard for the title next year, and that would be very spicy indeed.
Ooh, and there are a lot of people who want to make that a bit wider because we got rookies coming in.
Yeah, Oscar Piastri coming in.
Piastri's dummy fast today.
Yeah, Theo Pourchaire coming in next year. Yuri Vips coming in next year. There's a lot of talent on the outside looking in. A lot to look forward to. Very highly rated talent. Oh, God,
a lot of hype.
You could say that Formula 2 and Formula 3 have way too many gimmicks with reverse grid races and compounds of tires, and I get all that, but ultimately speaking, the best drivers still rise to the top of the pile.
Yeah.
Indeed. And what a fantastic season it was in Formula 2. The first season I've watched every single race, and it was tremendous all the way through from top to bottom. An incredible, like, this is a real golden age for young driving talent right now in Formula 2 and 3. You know, we're going to be seeing, like, Theo Pourchaire coming in. He was born in 2003, and he's going to be, like, on paper, maybe the 6th or 7th best guy coming into the series next year. That's terrifying to me. It is an incredible set of talent. Can't wait for Formula 2 and Formula 3, and we'll probably give them even more focus, and thanks Formula 1 for spreading them out a bit more, so we don't have to have like 90-minute long Formula One episodes next year because the bloody juniors are so goddamn good.
What do you mean?
Shame about
what do you
the
mean? We're gonna have three races each weekend. Any of these series show up for?
Yes, oh, yeah. More races, more.
And W Series is back on some of these rounds too. So we get even more junior Formula racing to complement our
More racing.
Formula Renault Euro Cup is back too. Formula Regional indeed. European, I should say, but with Renault engines. It's all going to be good fun with as far as that goes.
Yeah, indeed. And yeah, as far as I'm concerned, can't wait for next year. But general housekeeping before we get out of town, you know where to find us, youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter at motorsport_101, our website motorsport101.com, and our Patreon page, patreon.com/motorsport101, if you'd like to back us financially. In closing, RJ, the floor is yours.
Okay, so we're going to talk about manners of potential sexual assault. Actual sexual assault. You know, I'm not actually sure when this episode is going to go public. You know, I appreciate everybody that's been so patient because we are a hardworking crew of independent journalists, and we try not to pull any punches, and we try not to bullshit our audience. You know, I'm not sure when this episode's going to go public, but we recorded this on Wednesday, December 9th, 2020, and this is the day that a very disturbing video was posted to Nikita Mazepin's Instagram profile, showing the 21-year-old driver reaching to grab the breast of his friend and model, Andrea Duval, seated in the passenger seat alongside Mazepin as she appears to push his hand away from her. Now, this was posted a week following Mazepin's official confirmation as a 2021 Formula One World Championship racing driver to the Haas F1 team, partnering fellow rookie prospect Mick Schumacher, during which time another young woman who is active on F1 social media posted screenshots of Mazepin attempting to solicit for explicit photographs through private messages on Twitter. I can say this in all confidence that Nikita Mazepin, and I feel very strongly about this, especially this morning when I woke up to the news, Nikita Mazepin has brought motor racing into disrepute today, especially Formula One. And this goes far beyond any of his previous outbursts of poor behavior that he's demonstrated. Because, yes, there was in 2016, he had that punch-up with Callum Ilott in F3. Callum Ilott, the Ferrari Driver Academy prospect that many now rightly feel should have been selected to partner Schumacher at Haas instead of Mazepin. You know, it goes far beyond toxic banter among his fellow F2 and F1 drivers, making insinuations about Russell's sexuality on Instagram. It goes beyond lashing out at Yuki Tsunoda after their battle at Spa-Francorchamps or driving multiple people to the pit wall to egregiously defend his position at the final round of an F2 campaign that, save for that, if you judge it just on his results and nothing else, this should have been a breakthrough for a driver who has improved by leaps and bounds in his second season and genuinely on the results alone would have warranted a place on the Formula One grid. And yes, it's true, he has financial considerations that also played a massive role in getting there to begin with, because his father, Dmitry Mazepin, is worth over $7 billion as of 2018. He is the chairman and majority shareholder of one of Russia's largest chemical and fertilizer manufacturers. He's invested heavily into Mikita's career, among the many charitable donations that he's made, while him and his company have also been accused of fraud, conflict of interest, ruthless acquisitions of rival companies in the field to build their grip on the industry, all with the blessings of a ruthless and corrupt government under Vladimir Putin that tramples on the lives of people who want their homeland to be a better place, a more inclusive place for us all. I think this past week, and especially today, has become apparent that of the many things Dmitry Mazepin has invested in on behalf of his son's career in motor racing, the one thing that he has not bought for his son is how to treat other people with basic respect. And I think that much is evident in that Nikita has not apologized today for the choices he made as a person, these terrible choices. He's only apologized for the trouble that his own appalling behavior has caused him as a professional. Not for the offenses himself, but just how it affects his career. Now, Haas F1 team already issued a statement today condemning his behavior. And now in the days to come, they sit between two choices. keeping their brand new driver and the Mazepin family's financial interests within the team in an attempt to keep them in operation or doing the right thing. It's not just a matter of him being just another rich kid with money diluting the talent pool either. You know, you have Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi. They are billionaire sons. They've been lambasted by sections of the racing media for their massive wealth and the perceived gap between their talent and their wealth, at least on the surface. But at least on the surface, they don't act in a manner that is unbecoming, not only of a young professional racing driver, but as a young person in society at large. It's very clear to me, and it's very clear to every one of us, that Nikita Mazepin is a corrupted, disturbed young man who needs corrective action that cannot and should not be undertaken while continuing a career in the highest levels of motor racing. And this is why we all believe that he should be stripped of his competition license with haste for putting the sport into disrepute. If he's given a second or a third chance, it would come at the expense of another driver's first or second chance, be it a second chance for a veteran like Sergio Perez, Nico Hülkenberg, Alexander Albon, or any other driver just trying to stay in the sport at all, or it could be at the expense of a first chance for a rookie like Callum Ilott or Pietro Fittipaldi, Jack Aitken, who would love to have this full-time opportunity that Mazepin has been instilled. I fear, and I think a lot of us fear, that this disturbing behavior will effectively go unpunished. I fear that the leadership of Haas F1 team will see the Mazepin family's wealth as being so alluring and so essential that no amount of toxic behavior would dissuade them from cutting him loose so long as he's licensed to compete in the sport. And, you know, even if he was expelled from F1, the roaring trend nowadays is that wherever he would show up next race, there would be this loud swath of people who would attempt to reconstruct the narrative that is being written today. They'll say that, oh, Mazepin is a true unheralded talent who was cast out of Formula One because of cancel culture and social justice warriors. It's something that effect. And that's ultimately a side effect, the way that extremists in our society have attempted to undermine people who would dare be brave enough to speak about it, but the poor behavior of others in so many other fields of entertainment. You know, in closing, I'd like to go ahead and say that, you know, we retract our previous statement saying that his backing and skill are an asset to this F1 team. Nobody's skill is worth that. Nobody's wealth is worth that. Nobody's skill and wealth is worth the harm that he's caused and may continue to cause in the future if this goes unchecked. Nikita Mazepin should not be certified to race in Formula One or anywhere else for a long, long while. And I hope the Haas F1 team will do the right thing, give someone else a first or second chance that's been much more deserved for them. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and your loved ones. For Cam Buckley, for Ryan King, for Dre Harrison, I'm RJ O'Connell. Thank you.